2022-711, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Kekinen, be resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby reconvened into regular open session of council at 6:35 p.m. Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. We'll have roll call once again.
Councilor Morley Haskam.
Councilor Debbie Zulak.
Councilor Mike Kekinen.
Clerk Administrator Aya Watkinson.
Deputy Clerk Carly Britton.
Treasurer Roshan Kantia.
Mayor David Gordon. Any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest in the general nature thereof? Hearing none. Resolution 23-712, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Haskam. Be resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby accept the reports, recommendations, and directions arising from the closed session held November 21st, 2023. Any discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. To honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they have carried for thousands of years, we pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit, work towards truth and reconciliation. Okay, so delegations and presentations. We have 11.1, the Georgian Nordic Outdoor Activity Center, planning for the future. And I believe Greg Mason is online. Do you want to go ahead with your presentation? Thanks for coming out tonight, by the way.
Thanks for allowing me to zoom in. It was too much of a drive, but it's better not to be driving.
Yeah, no, we appreciate that.
I do have a PowerPoint. I'm not sure if you want me to share my screen. Carly?
Sure, yeah, that's okay, Greg.
It's okay, yeah.
I can't share.
I'm just going to make you a co-host, and then you should be able to share. Okay.
There we go. So good evening, everybody. My name is Greg Mason, and I'm the president of the Georgian Nordic Outdoor Activity Center, which is located just down the road from you on the 495 Lake Road in McDougall. And I've been the president now for 3 years, and I've worked for on and off for the last 20. But I've been a lifelong skier and biker at the club. Tonight, what I want to present to you is sort of some of the background and history of the club, but also speak to some of our future plans and take the opportunity to ask for a small financial input into some of those future plans, but as well just use this opportunity to let you and your ratepayers know about some of the activities that are going on at the facility. Many of you will have known the ski club as just that, a cross-country ski club and perhaps a little bit of paddling. But in the recent years, we've rebranded and refocused our work to be on all ages and all seasons and many different kinds of activities. I have me, but I can't turn the pages. We were founded or incorporated over 40 years ago and then became a registered charity. We have 40 kilometers of cross-country ski trails and an additional 15 to 20 kilometers of snowshoe, mountain bike, hiking trails. And we're on 800 acres in McDougall Township. We own about a little over close to 300 acres of that. In recent years, we've expanded and grown from sort of an average membership of 500 to 550 to now having 700 consistent members after the COVID bump. And we're seeing visitation that was around sort of, 4,000 visits or visitors a year And now it's well over 20,000, and we're taking measures just to be able to actually count and tabulate what those are, or how many of those are. I mentioned cross-country skiing, but in recent years we've expanded to include winter fat biking. Snowshoeing trail has kind of been there for the last 8 to 9 years. But we're really seeing a surge of use in hiking and dog walking throughout the three sort of our shoulder seasons, what we consider our shoulder seasons, spring, summer, and fall. And then the mountain biking, there's a huge network, a significant network of mountain bike trails that have been developed in there that are really being a draw to not only residents in the area, but also bringing people in from outside the area. We have a pretty significant focus on youth training and youth competitions and youth events. And most recently, we were able to host 450 youth in the Georgian Bay District for the high school cross-country running race. So quite some really significant events. And then in addition to all the activities that happen at the center, we support a paddling club that does paddling training, mostly, again, for youth. One of our pilot projects that many of your kids may have participated in the past is our Jackrabbit Ski Program. And this is really a quite innovative program for our facility, because what we do is we attract young kids and parents, ages sort of 4 up to 14 years old, to go through and learn how to cross-country ski. And then we turn those youth into coaches, and all through the high school career, they will be the cross-country coaches for their kids, and of course supported by adults and adult parent coaches. But it's a really an interesting mentorship experience to watch these youth become the coaches for the kids and inspire that next generation. It's quite fun. And of course, we have a healthy crew of adult parent coaches. We have a number of different youth training programs. Right now, we're the host for a GeoVenture High School program where they get to do 2 credits of high school and use Georgian Nordic, among other facilities, for biking and hiking, and hopefully skiing if they get snow before the end of their semester. We're expanding on our community events and community races, so we're partnering with other organizations like Challenge the Shield and Get It North Perry's Town to host adventure races, orienteering races and events, and also partnering to do nature hikes and nature walks, including this fall we did a mushroom gorge walk with a local community member in the biosphere. So we're really trying to expand the number of people that are being able to access and use the facility in that year-round basis. Of course, because a not-for-profit, we have a healthy board of directors of 11 folks right now. We have a budget of $110,000 per annum, and that's all self-funded. So we through memberships, our day passes, various donations, equipment rentals, and events, we generate that $110,000 that allows us to, you know, degree the trails, maintain the trails, place equipment, including put money into a reserve. So operationally, we're in a sound financial position. In the last number of years, we've completed a strategic plan, and then most recently a trails master plan to look at how we want to develop the trails and our facility in the next sort of 5 to 10 years. And this is helping guide us on where we're at right now. None of this is possible without our many, many volunteers. We count ourselves lucky that throughout the year, we have about 100 volunteers that will continue to come out and support events, trail clearing, trail maintenance, grooming, coaching, working at the chalet in the winter season, all in support of getting people outside. So we're really quite delighted by that. We probably have a contingent of about 40 volunteers that are really quite active in running the facility. It's quite a delight to be there. In the last couple of years, some of the improvements that we're making has been to get an electronic kiosk that allows us to capture revenues that we hadn't previously caught in the spring, summer, and fall. In its first year of operation, we were able to get $8,000 of revenue just from mountain bikers and hikers that are able to more easily, through the kiosk, basically pay their day use fees. We are working on generating new trails, and then we've improved our outdoor washrooms so that, you know, all season, especially when the chalet is closed, that there's comfortable place for folks to go to the washroom. Right now, from a trail construction perspective, one of the things that we're working on is making sure, and want to continue to work on, is making sure that the drainage, the water is able to drain away from the trails better. This allows us to one, maintaining the trails better, because a wet trail tends to erode and degrade faster. And as well, in the winter time, if there's wetness in the ground, basically we melt our snow from underneath. So we can evacuate the snow from the trail, away from the trail area, or evacuate the rain, pardon me, then we can retain our snow longer. The other one we're trying to do is grade our trails more evenly. This will allow us to groom our trails with as little as 10 to 15 centimeters of snow. It's not awesome grooming, but it is some kind of grooming if they're graded that well. And this allows us to get youth and community members out skiing earlier this season. But also, as we're seeing these flips between warmer and cooler weather increase, then we're able to respond and get on and groom the trails more readily after those freestyle activities. And this is a tremendous amount of work, as you no doubt appreciate, working in Canadian Shield to get trails to this kind of level, but it's good work. Right now, what we're doing is we're excited to have launched our $1 million campaign. It's a future fund campaign. It's 3 years of capital effort. We're looking at what we're going to be doing is building a picnic pavilion. It's enclosable in the winter time to add additional shelter space in the winter months, but then we can open it up and leave it open as a picnic shelter for bikers and hikers to use at their whim. And we don't have to be there and have somebody on site. We're in bad need of a new garage facility. The current facility is about 400 square feet, which means that a lot of our winter grooming equipment is left out in the snow. And that means we have any number of maintenance issues, and having to replace our equipment or pieces of our equipment much sooner than we would like. It's just financially not efficient. And the last piece is that we really want to be working on those trail improvements. We were fortunate enough to be able to buy 18 acres of land just to the south of the chalet facility, which has a height of land that allows us to introduce some new types of hills into a performance ski loop, and some really exciting bike and snowshoe terrain as well. We've been fortunate, if you take a look at the math on this, that we were initially provided $150,000 anonymous donation to kickstart our campaign. And then we're just in the process of submitting phase two. In fact, I actually just pressed send on an NHFC application 3 minutes ago for $500,000 and a FEDNOR ask of $150,000 that's pending, which leaves us with a $200,000 cash in kind sort of financial goal for the campaign over the next 3 years to get us past the goals. So here's an image of a kind of picnic shelter. We'll be able to bring in garage doors into this facility. It'll have heated in-floor heating. It'll be heated through a wood stove, but also solar thermal heating on the roof. The new garage facility on the right is, well, they're never big enough, but this is this provides sort of shelter for a number of our it as well. We'll have a heated floor that, as long as we get to 5 degrees, we're able to melt snow off our grooming equipment in the winter time and keep it well maintained. And then overall, we'll be able to secure more of our equipment year round. And then this will allow us to repurpose our old garage into a rental facility for our ski, bike, and snowshoe rental program. And the last piece is that we want to bring in new equipment to allow us to maintain and build trails that are better quality, but also we want to groom the trails. So currently we groom by dragging equipment that basically just kind of through gravity drag works the snow and sets track. What we actually need to be able to set trails and conditions is a tilling device that would operate off a PTO on a tractor or a piston pulley type machine. And so we want to fundraise for that so that we can actually get out. But until we have a garage in place, it's not really worth spending this much money on equipment. So that's sort of these three phases of our work. So we're really excited. We think it's a very promising three-year campaign. It's already off to a good start with that anonymous donation. And we are asking for contributions from councils. I think you're my fifth deputation in the last 2 weeks. And we understand that municipalities financially are constrained in a know that there's a recreation facility that's underway. We don't want to cause too much of a financial burden, but we do think there's an exciting opportunity here. So in light of all that, we're asking for a modest funding request from different municipalities of anywhere from $3,000 to $12,000. So those municipalities, like the town of Parry Sound, McDougall, that have more rate payers that actually access the facility, we are asking for that increased amount of $10,000 to $12,000. I think for McKellar, we would ask for somewhere around $2,000 to $3,500 if that seemed appropriate. And additionally, I would say is that if it fits with council's budgeting process, if you're interested in supporting, we're more than welcome to have a commitment spread over two or three fiscal years if that suits your budgeting needs better. If first that you're actually interested in supporting the initiative at all. So anyway, thanks very much for the opportunity. I hope I was up to 10 minutes. And yeah, again, thanks for having me drive out. So I appreciate it.
Thank you for the information, Greg. I certainly appreciate that. And it's always nice when you throw a figure out at us. I guess you got that from experience talking to previous councils. We appreciate that too, because just not knowing exactly what you're looking for. I'll just turn it over to council if they have any particular questions about the programs. We know that people from McKellar use it, certainly, and it's something that we don't provide here. So it's close enough to us, as you said, that it is certainly an interesting facility, and it's been used, as you say, too, through high school a lot. Any questions from council? Okay, I'm going to open it up to the public as well if you have any questions.
That's marvelous.
I'm just wondering, I know I participated in this going back a lot of years, and I don't want to date myself here, but outdoor education, I don't know whether you mentioned that or not. Is that part of the school program, or do they go further afield than here?
So what we, in the last couple of years, we access, or we work with the schools in a number of different ways. So right now, the Out Trip Club, pardon me, has been using the club for their hiking trips, rather than going to Clarny as they had in years past when I was in high school. So it's just been a more convenient location even through COVID. I mentioned the GeoVenture program, which is a special program that is running at the high school right now, a two-credit program. They're using it. And then there are after-school programs, depending on the teacher's availability to organize and bring students out after school. And then we're just in the process. Last year, there was a teacher, Robin McDonald, who got some funds to support school groups coming out during the day. And we're just in the process of trying to sort out how our club can actually, you know, help to pay for busing if that's what's needed to get kids out. Because frankly, having youth spend the day at the ski club, I think it was on like five or six different locations last year. It was the highlight of the winter for me, watching them running around, skiing, snowshoeing, playing winter games. So certainly making sure the club is accessible for school groups is a key strategic goal of the board.
You mentioned membership and also the people, the visitors, I guess, guests. So anybody can actually attend and sort of for a day pass? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a membership just from a convenience perspective and just to help with ongoing revenue generation. But what has been growing is the day use, day passes, and then equipment rentals, so supporting that. So yes, absolutely, anybody can come at any time. We want to be open and encouraging the public to use the facility.
I don't want to pry into this too much, but you mentioned 800 acres, 300 of which you own, and the other 500 is at least. I'm just wondering how that operates.
No, for sure. Thanks. It's through a land use permit. So all of our trails are marked and GPSed, and then they get submitted into a land use permit with the MNR, or pardon me, MECP now, I guess. And that gets reviewed. I think it's taken like 5 years that's reviewed. And most recently we were able to move the snowmobile trail over closer to the railway tracks, and that's allowed us to access, and basically we transferred their land use permit, part of the snowmobile trail, over to us. while continuing to give them access up to Nine Mile Lake Road from Portage Lake. So it's been a good partnership there as well.
Excellent. Any further questions? You mentioned budget. Now we're trying to start a little earlier doing our budgeting, but we probably won't know until the new year. But again, we appreciate your presentation and giving us a figure to aim for.
Perfect. Thanks again. Really appreciate it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Resolution 23-713, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Kekkonen. Be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the deputation from Greg Mason, President of the Georgian Nordic Activity Center, in regards to planning for the organization's future. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. On to 11.2, Lake Stewardship Environmental Committee, proposed tree canopy and natural vegetation bylaw. I guess Jennifer, you want to lead this?
The tree canopy and natural vegetation bylaw number 2019-12 was adopted to fulfill a requirement of the Municipal Act of 2001, which required all municipalities to have such a bylaw in place by March the 1st, 2019. The Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee decided that the existing bylaw reflected mainly the needs of an urban environment and the advantages of an urban tree canopy. We wish to amend the bylaw to reflect the needs of a rural area with abundant surface water in the form of lakes, rivers, and streams. We also wanted to expand the bylaw to include the importance of having natural vegetation in the zones by the water shores. Let me note here that while this is a bylaw, it is really a policy, and as such does not require resources to enforce it. The revised bylaw emphasizes the need to shift from the exclusive use of grass as ground cover. The short roots of grass are not an effective filter for rainwater before it enters the lake. Long-rooted plants are much more effective at filtering and absorbing nutrients and sequestering carbon. Long-rooted indigenous plants will more effectively combat the erosion of silt into the waterways as a result of the heavier rainstorms that will result from climate change. And we've seen a couple of those rainstorms in the last summer. Another change we made was to specify that grass or other short-rooted plants must be put over a septic bed in order to prevent the growth of roots into the pipes. So that was one of the exceptions that we put into the policy. Yes, we want you to grow long-rooted plants, but not over your septic, so just to make that perfectly clear. We also offered the alternative of removing the lower branches of a tree in order to open a view as an alternative to removing the whole tree and having the soil destabilized as a result. Additionally, we edited the list of suggested indigenous plants, including the substitution of butterfly weed for milkweed. As someone pointed out to us, that milkweed can be toxic for cattle. Importantly, we added a reference to minimizing the risk of a wildfire spreading to a home or cottage and an internet reference for further information. So while we're saying plant lots of trees and lots of bushes on your property, we're saying but keep note of what the fire hazards can be. So it's primarily evergreen trees shouldn't be close to the cottage because they burn more readily than deciduous trees, and how far away to have your wood pile and all that kind of thing. So, finally, we added indicators of lake health in the form of a loon count. So this loon count started this summer and will go on in the future on the long weekends, and a lot of people participated in it and have heard very positive feedback about that. And also the measurement of surface water parameters to be included in the revised policy. It is hoped that this revised bylaw will serve as a reference and an educational tool for the residents of McKellar Township. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and Sue Pop is here if you have questions about plants in particular.
Councillor Zulak.
Yeah, you mentioned, Jennifer, something about septic beds.
Yes.
About, well, septic beds, they're required before approval to be sodded and seeded.
Right.
Before they get their approval.
Right. So, but we're just saying that's the big exception to this policy, where we're saying plant long-rooted indigenous
okay.
plants. We're saying don't do that on your septic bed.
Okay.
Septic bed is grass,
yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
Other questions, council? I just notice on page 10. You have an actual figure in there, part of the policy. I don't think it's in the present one. 75% of the shoreline and 75% of the area of the property, including buildings, should be maintained in a naturalized state.
That's the suggestion from Watersheds Canada. And
okay.
So it's not a rule.
No, I realize
it's
a policy.
But it's, you know, just to give people a guideline, if you're looking for how much of your shoreline should be naturalized, that's what we're saying. Have 75% for your buildings or your dock or your area down near the shore, and or 25% for that, and 75% for the planting and bushes and whatnot.
Any other questions here? You'd also mentioned, I think, maybe it was that part too, for the vegetation on the shoreline. So 25% would not necessarily have to be natural state. That could be used for beach or
pathways. Yeah. Or, you know, some people have a little deck and that kind of thing, or walkway to the dock. Yeah, that's to facilitate that. So I don't have a list of them on this policy, but I can provide you with a list of references that we use. If you're interested in that, I can.
Well, I think the references would be important, because the Lakeshore Capacity Handbook in particular, that came up, and I don't know whether Ina was able to find anything from the Mikulski study that was done, but it was an extensive study anyway, and he really questioned the Lakeshore Capacity Handbook, and with the ministry even. He had long discussions with them, because his argument was that it didn't apply to a lot of the lakes in our area, and that's why I'm saying, and that's why really with the policy, we had it changed at the time with the various lakes. Each lake, if you remember in our plan, is noted that you can do such and such, so much development based on the phosphorus input on a per lot basis or some sort of thing, as opposed to you just can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the thing that he wanted to promote, that the Lakeshore Capacity Handbook was quite restrictive, saying that you can only do such and such, and many of the lakes in our case would probably be at capacity then based on that handbook.
Right.
And his argument was that no, you take it on a case-by-case basis. Many of these lakes can still accept development based on the phosphorus intake and what might be produced. And so that's why when this comes up, and he's the one that we weren't privy to all the discussions he had with municipal affairs on that particular handbook, but I'm not sure if it's referenced in our policy much anymore. So we'd have to certainly research that and see the status of that handbook,
right,
and whether it's still, I would say, legislation that we go to investigate. So you mentioned sources that you'd be
quoting. That's certainly one that we used.
Yeah.
I don't remember that. I'd be interested to look at that again
and
from that point of view.
Yeah, I just recall that, and I know it's going back over a decade, but he talked about the nature of the lakes in our area, so, and that they were, the policy itself is more applicable to different lakes of a different nature, so that's just something to consider that we'll have to look at.
Certainly,
into, so.
Yeah. I think there is a new version of that lake capacity.
Right, I'm sure there has been, so.
I think Bev Clark, who did the 2018 study in McKellar Township, has a lot to do with the new one. That's my recollection from reading it, but
no, that'd be excellent. I think that's what we need too, is a list of your sources
yeah.
that you're actually referencing, And then, as you say, if there's updated ones that we should be investigating.
Yeah, I have the list, but I'll also send in the, I'm sure I have the PDFs.
Yeah.
And I can just send the resources so you don't have to go tracking them down.
Well, it was good. Many are already included in here. You've referenced them, so.
Right.
Councilor Zula?
I was just wondering, Aynan, when you were looking for the Mikulski thing, did you look under Y-Ridge?
I've been looking under Y-Ridge.
And there's nothing there?
I haven't been able to find it yet.
It's quite thick.
It should be.
Yeah.
It's a big
file. I'll look at home because I might have it.
Okay.
Oh, you, yes, I remember you mentioning that. I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
I'll look.
Yeah.
I used to, but
I don't
during,
know
the,
if
during
I do.
The pandemic, well, I was instructed to start culling a lot of the materials. It made for good fire, but.
I know. I think I would have kept that, but I'll have to check.
Yeah, I've checked in. In our filing system under environmental, anything there.
But you
would
think
in
the whole file of Y-Ridge would have that.
It should be in there, but the files are quite extensive, and I'll have to pull the whole thing out and go through page by page by page because they're pretty packed.
That was
yeah, but it's
2007.
Okay.
And it's like,
what
it's
year
like.
2009.
You know.
10, somewhere there.
I'll ask them
bound.
To look in
oh, it's
the
bound?
CA
okay.
files too, but I know.
Yeah.
The word.
Yeah, actually, they were quite involved, different people in the MLCA and letters with this particular development proposal.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure they have records of the studies.
Well,
there was
I
a
bet
motion.
You could get Mikulski to send a copy.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't, whether he's still around, whether he's still in business, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's in Bracebridge.
But he had done a boating capacity study as well, and we do have copies of that. I actually saved that one, but that was a difficult one to actually enforce. And
absolutely, it would be.
Yeah, it was yeah. hard. I think it was one of the things that was requested at the time, so he went ahead and did it. But even he admitted that you know it's difficult to know at different times of the day. He would say there's higher boating activity certainly in certain locations of the lake, Manitowoc in particular. But how to enforce all of that too when we don't have enforcement control on the lakes. So, no, this is very useful, and it's something that, as you say, that was legislated and it was in place. And I think Ina's done some research with surrounding municipalities, what they have in place as well. And so we'll be looking at that and your suggestions. Yeah.
Good.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Resolution 23-714, moved by Councillor Haskam, second by Councillor Kekkonen. Be resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received a deputation from Jennifer Gent Fuller, Chair of the Lake Stewardship Environmental Committee, in regards to the proposed tree canopy and natural vegetation bylaw. Discussion? All the question? All those in favor? Not opposed? Carried. To Committee of the Whole, I have Resolution 23-715 with the Councilor Kekkonen, second to Councilor Zulak. Be resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby moved into Committee of the Whole at 7:08 p.m. to discuss the 2024 Council meeting schedule and propose changes to the procedural bylaw as recommended by staff, and further to gather comment from the public to ensure Council meetings are accessible to ratepayers. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? Now hold, Gary. Okay, I don't know who wants to lead the charge on this, Carly. Is it put you on the spot?
So for our procedural bylaw, every year before November 30th, Council needs to approve of the Council meeting dates. So what you've seen in your package for 2024 is what our procedural bylaw currently is. The first two meetings in January are the second and fourth Tuesday of the month, and then the rest of the year is the first and third. If Council were to accept the dates tonight but still wanted to discuss more about times, we can just approve the dates separately, and then an amendment to the procedural bylaw could come at a different meeting to change times. So 2023 saw a low attendance in the public. Arguably more were coming in over Zoom. We had released a survey online where there was 25 respondents. Council received the results of those of that survey. So the public would like the meeting to stay in the evenings, and then some opted for a 1 o'clock daytime meeting as well. Staff are recommending that one meeting be held in the daytime at 1 o'clock and one meeting be held in the daytime. The start of the meeting would be at 5:30 p.m. The first agenda items would be either closed session, or that would allow time for a committee of adjustment meeting. The public portion of the meeting wouldn't start until 6:30 p.m., so no change. Having one daytime meeting allows for staff to be more readily available to come to council meetings and speak to reports, such as our fire chief. He has fire training on Tuesday nights, so he's unable to attend most council meetings. Same with our director of operations. In the winter, he's busy with snow plowing and maintenance, so it'd be easier for him to attend the daytime meeting. We would propose that evening meetings be reserved for deputations, items that would be in the public's interest, like road items, items about the pool, and the daytime meeting would be more procedural council business, like the consent agenda and accounts payable and other just regular council business that isn't really, the public wouldn't comment on those items as much. And then for deputations, if someone were to be from an organization that has office hours and they can attend an evening meeting, that they would be able to choose a daytime or evening meeting.
Okay, questions of council? Council Gazula.
Okay, so currently in here you have summary of the 2023 meetings. And I'm just wondering, did you do a summary of the meetings in 2022?
No, just 2023.
Because it would be nice to compare the number of meetings that this year and the ones last year.
Yeah, I can compile a list for 2022.
And the year before. And the year before.
Because I've
the last 4 years.
So also I note the dates here on the schedule, right?
Yeah.
So it, why are the, some of them the first Tuesday? Like usually it's
so the January meeting is the it's so it is the first and third Tuesday as per procedural bylaw.
All year except for
January. Right.
January is the 2nd and 4th.
And that just allows for council meeting preparation because we're closed for Christmas, so it's hard to put together a full agenda for a meeting for the first Tuesday of the month.
Well, we want some time off if we're celebrating New Year's, right?
That's good.
I guess I could comment. Overall, I like the report. I think it's a good report. It has potential. I kind of feel the same way in a way that day meetings are, I think, can be more productive. I find it hard. I'm kind of an early bird, so I'm up at 5:30 every morning. So 9 o'clock kind of hits. That's usually kind of when I start dozing off. And I'm sure you've noticed at council meetings probably. It's happened at 9 o'clock. I doze off. But
we haven't differentiated sometimes. When you're dozing and when you're not. So
you can't tell. Eh?
No.
Okay, so overall, I like the report now. We're having troubles getting business done, I think, as it is with the amount of meetings we're having now. So the report we got, it sounds like the public kind of like the 6:30 meetings, and I still think we got to have a third meeting per month. I think we started that way at the start of this year where we had our regular council meetings, and then we decided, I think, 1 o'clock every Friday or Tuesday or something. We were also having meetings. We went like that for a while, and then handle some of the budgets. So I'd like to see us maybe get back into that role. Now, whether we eliminate one of the evening meetings per month and only have one evening meeting per month, if we can get the work done, I think that's most important. Somehow or another, I would be fine with that. I can make 1 o'clock meetings if council can. Now, a problem with that going into the future, say another election, but another council can change that, but you're kind of, a lot of people that do work for a living, daytime meetings is not going to work for them, so you hate to get in a situation where you go into an election and you basically rule out all the working stiffs, which could be a younger council, which I'm willing to trade my spot one day for a younger person, but overall I like it. If council's fine with going to the other daytime meeting, I would be okay with that. I'm just a little concerned about getting the work done. And if we had an extra meeting per month, that's basically like a council meeting, and we could make sure that our evening meetings don't go past the 4 hours, say, I think that would be an achievement. You know, if we start at 5:30 and we say 9:30 is it or something, and then we have another 4 hour meeting from 1 till 5, you know, one of those other weeks, and handle a lot of the stuff like working with staff, their reports, and items that, you know, that the public just aren't going to be interested in attending anyway. So overall, I like the report, but it's going to be a council decision, decide whether we try this going forward, and as long as we can get the work done. That's...
Anybody else? Mr. Peckman?
I like to have consistency, so the 6:30 regular, two meetings a month. It's not like it's every night of the week. We have two meetings per month, and so I don't think it's putting anybody in a, you know, difficult situation, whether it be staff or council members, to be able to attend two meetings per month at, you know, 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock, whatever time the start time is. And we have a clerk and a deputy clerk, so if there's a rotation between the clerk and deputy clerk of clerking the meetings, if they do feel that two evening meetings per month is too much, that that can be divvied up. And if need be, that's what I was thinking, if the meetings are too long, then a third meeting per month, and that could be a special meeting. It could be a daytime meeting. Just that may reduce the length of the meetings for the evening meetings, how long they stretch on into the evening. But yeah, I think as well the public, if they do want to attend, then if it's during the day, it does cut into their work day and aren't able to attend. So. And as well, any council members that are working during the day, that's now it starts being a little difficult for scheduling. So,
yeah, I think we'll go ahead, Councilor.
I was just in your report here, Carly, in one part here on the second page, it's saying evening meetings in 2023. That paragraph there have been regularly adjourning late. Okay, and then it says the following day after a council meeting is a heavy workload day as staff are busy circulating resolutions carried at the meeting and following up with council business discussed the night prior. So who is doing that stuff? Like, you prepare the minutes?
Yes.
Okay, and do you do all of that other stuff? Like,
yes.
Circulating the well, can't that be shared between other staff members?
It can be.
And then it would take a lot of the workload off of you for having to prepare that. Because I know you do the minutes practically before we leave the meeting. But shouldn't that be shared? I mean, if that's heavy, if it's a lot for one individual to do, shouldn't maybe, like I knew you should be doing some of that?
Yep.
Would that help alleviate it?
Yes, yeah.
But normally, if that's the case, is the clerk is the one who does the council meeting minutes, agendas. So it seems like a lot of that workload is being shifted, so I think it needs to shift back to where the you know, expectation of responsibilities is.
A lot of deputy clerks in the area as well do handle the minutes and the resolution forwarding. It's usually the deputy, not the clerk, doing it with most municipalities, so it leaves the clerk free to do more higher level municipal business. This is more just operational.
Even when I started in 2017, I did the minutes, and then they went to Sean to approval before they went to council. I did the minutes from council meeting.
Yeah, I think for 2023, it was a bit of an anomaly as we ran into trouble in December with our technology, of course, and
mm-hmm.
things were carried over, and that's why we had a number of meetings, a lot of clarification, actually completing some files that existed from mm-hmm. previous council.
We're
so
deferred.
That's why we had so many meetings and a lot of planning issues that were started previous council, and this council finished them generally. And so I think there were extra meetings there. I think, as Carly has said, we're probably getting more committee of adjustment meetings than we've had before, which has to be factored in somehow because that adds to the length of the day. I think it's good that we're doing it prior to a council meeting so that we don't come out twice. A third meeting, I'm not sure that we need that. Again, I'm not sure of the actual workload and what we're covering here. I'm just going back. We used to get by, certainly, with two meetings a month. And the last council, my understanding was, we went back to one meeting a month. I don't know how they did it. There were an awful lot of special meetings. I think that's why it's a good idea to have 2022 as comparative figures, because meetings were being called all the time. But, and things, I mean, it's time sensitive, a lot of our information, so I don't think we could certainly go back to one. And to three, maybe that's a bridge too far. I'm not sure we need it. A lot are actually going to, my understanding anyway, to one meeting a month again, and one committee meeting, or whether it be a council meeting or whatever, that way. So it's two for a month as opposed to three. I'm not sure that we would actually have the workload for three meetings. I know when you come to, there are going to be certain times of budget that you mentioned,
yeah.
where you might run into three meetings in a month. That's fine. That can be scheduled as a special meeting. But to schedule three meetings a month, every month, I think that's probably a little overkill. I think there'll be peak periods when you have to meet more often, but just my opinion on it. As far as the afternoon, as you say, with staff, it's certainly more convenient to, you know, to have staff here. I'm not sure about the Tuesday night for Rob in particular that you mentioned, I mean, and with Greg. We're never sure when it's going to be snowing. It could be snowing during the day and he'd be out too. So I know he'd be called out in the evening, certainly at a meeting, but he hasn't been to that many meetings anyway that we've called him in. And Rob's reports are quite detailed, and I'm not sure he has to be at most of the meetings either. Roshan, it's always good to focus in on some of his figures, and and he's available too. And I don't know, it's good to hear from other staff members too, I guess, and certainly the public is suggesting, from what we've heard, it's a small survey at this point, respondents, they're suggesting staying the same that we're doing. But and I interpret that things have quietened down, I think, over the last term of council. And as you say, I think a lot of it's not necessarily that it's not interesting to people, but a lot of them have focused on what is happening, what's actually being accomplished, and they haven't seen the need to start attending. And I'm sure if there were some controversial issues, things that they disagreed with, that they'd be here in droves. But I think they're quite, I can't say pleased because I haven't done the survey, but with what we've done. And I think back too of, you know, decades ago, and when the council chambers was here, it was reconfigured, but very seldom did you have people turning out to council meetings. I mean, Councillor Haskam can attest to that, Councillor Bazuna. And so I don't think there's anything any different, except that we're a bit of a contrast from the previous council. And So I'm not sure whether changing this is actually going to get more people out. And I wouldn't be too concerned the fact that people aren't following. I just take that as a testament to that things are moving fairly smoothly, and we have a good staff in place, and things are getting done. But I know it's. I think we'd have to, as far as the dates, you're right, by the November 30th, we have to have that published according to procedural bylaw. But as far as the actual times, that's still open for further people to fill in the survey if they do and get some more opinions. I had one concern with the daytime meetings when I joined the Belvedere board. I actually petitioned the other townships too, and they agreed with me that yes, it should be an evening. So because I was working full time at the time, and as it turned out, somebody else had to go on the board because they wouldn't change. They were going to be a day meeting, and so that limited my attendance. But I know some of the committees that have been set up, the pool committee, they do an evening meeting, so people can attend there, I guess. What other committees do we attend? The police, CPAC, that's evening. So I'm just wondering how many daytime meetings there are, other than councils are starting to do that for committee meetings or for staff reasons.
I know the library, I'm on the library, and we've just changed to
the evening.
Yeah, we've just changed over to the evenings from 7 till 9 and in public, and we'll be in public and also on Zoom, but too because we're trying to get volunteers for the, you know, members for the library, and a lot of people work during the day, and so an evening meeting works for them. And I imagine it's the same for, like, you might get a lot of people on Zoom watching a meeting, but probably a lot of those are working during the day, so that's why they're picking the 6:30 times, because they're home and they can also see it then.
And that's why the recommendation too is to better plan out the agenda. So anything on a daytime meeting, you know, it wouldn't really draw the public in. It's more the consent agenda. It's municipal business that has to be passed through council with no really public consultation. It's just regular business. And then if the public was interested to see what happened during the daytime meeting, then there's the minutes. We'll have YouTube up and running at some point. Like, there are ways for the public still to view the daytime meeting, but it's more just municipal procedural business, is not any business that would draw the public in, like planning matters or anything that the public would definitely have an interest in.
I think it's hard to schedule things that come up onto the agenda and say that, well, we're going to have these things discussed at 1 o'clock, and then a month later we'll you know, schedule it like that. I think that there's always business that's coming in that you can't anticipate that it's going to come in, and to say that those kinds of things are going to be discussed next month at 1 p.m. is, I think the way it is set up currently, it works, because it's just allows for continual flow of the business of the township, and not having to segregate it into having to take place at a certain time of the day. I think it's quite effective, and the way it is currently structured.
Yeah, something to be said for that, because you're right, you wouldn't want to keep people waiting for one meeting a month. That I guess it could be scheduled into the daytime meeting, but it's hard to know what's coming in. I mean, you'd have a better idea as staff of what comes in on a daily basis, but open it up to the public as well. So jump in here. I don't know if they've done the survey or not yet, but and anybody online?
I'll be working shift work, so I'm not opposed to an afternoon meeting, getting in and jumping in and seeing those, because I do jump in on Zoom from time to time. Also, what about the option of starting a little earlier on your Tuesday evening ones, maybe? Because I have been to meetings where they run really late, and I'm a morning person. So my 9 o'clock, what you're all saying is kind of just floating away on me. That's just
mine. And the one thing with the meeting, we mentioned it's already committee of adjustment comes prior to a council meeting, so we try to keep it on the same night. So that comes early. We had one tonight at 5 to 6, and then the closed session, because we're set up with Zoom, It's too hard to set up the Zoom and then cut out the Zoom for the closed session at the end, then go back to Zoom at the end. So our closed meetings go at the beginning as well. So that's why a lot of this starts earlier and it runs later.
Okay.
So it's, yeah, if we started any earlier, we would be doing afternoon meetings. But I mean, that's another thing. I mean, there are places where the committee of adjustment, they have a certain day set aside just for that.
Yes, no? And townships have a scheduled committee adjustment meetings, like Seguin. I was just looking at theirs today. So they say your application has to be in by X date to make it for this meeting date, and then this is when your appeal period would end. We could do that, but it's hard to judge how many minor variance applications we'll receive. In 2022, we received zero. This year, we're at 13. Who knows what 2024 will be? So I don't think I would really recommend scheduling committee adjustment meetings, and it's working well just having it within the regular meeting, because once we receive an application, then the time starts, and then we have deadlines that we need to hit.
No, I think it's been excellent. It's certainly a boon to the public that they're able to put an application in and have it heard within a very short time. Whereas you say, they might have had to wait a long time if there's no committee of adjustment meeting set up. Other comments? Anybody on Zoom? Weigh in. Now, you have checked other townships, what they're doing? I don't need names, but just generally as far as their meeting schedule?
A lot of townships are now currently looking at their meeting schedule just because their procedural bylaws also say that you need to put out the meeting dates for next year, and a lot are moving to daytime. But again, it's up to our council and what you decide. I would maybe recommend changing to 5:30 just because our procedural bylaw says our meetings start at 6:30, which we've really been starting them earlier to account for closed session. So if no meeting changes were to change for daytime versus evening, I would recommend maybe having our regular meeting start at 5:30, and then we can account for an hour of closed every meeting, and then we're still within our procedural bylaw.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually. Yeah. That's something we could adjust in the procedural bylaw quite quickly.
Yeah.
But I guess it's still... The elephant in the room is still whether it be a daytime meeting or just continue the way we are.
We'll just take a consensus.
Well, as I say, I don't know whether you want to wait for more information from the survey. The only thing we have to have by the 30th
is
the actual dates.
Yeah. So do that and then.
So we can pass this, no problem.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Council meeting schedule.
Yeah, that'll all be on Tuesday. That's the only thing. If you want to switch it from a Tuesday for the evening meeting and a Thursday for the day meeting, that would be a problem.
I think just keep the days consistent, then the public knows Tuesdays 1st and 3rd, except January. And as soon as you start changing days and times, people at any place where they expect certain things to be at open at certain point, days and times, then yeah, they like consistency.
You're not referencing transfer station.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm referencing.
Yes, well, we'll deal with that. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thanks, Carl.
And if we could get the comparison of the meetings back to 2020, because we had, yeah, I think
you
we
know
did
how long it took to get that.
With all of your extra time.
Yeah. if you're going to compile
22
that.
22 anyways.
Well, I think there was two meetings a month at the beginning of the 2020 term of council. So,
and the change?
Yeah. Sometime during the term.
One meeting a month, the agendas were.
Well,
yeah.
And it wasn't one meeting a month. It was like because there was more special meetings. So
exactly.
It probably
exactly
ends up the same as what we had this
we
past
had
year.
Just as many meetings.
Yeah, resolution 23-716, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Hassman, be resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar. Hereby arise and report from committee of the whole at 7:34 p.m. No question, all those in favor? None opposed? Carried. And resolution 23-717, moved by Councilor Kekkonen, second by Councilor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby adopt the following regular council meeting schedule for 2024. Tuesday, January the 9th, 2024 is carried throughout. Tuesday, January 23rd, Tuesday, February the 6th, Tuesday, February the 20th, Tuesday, March the 5th, Tuesday, March the 19th, Tuesday, April the 2nd, Tuesday, April 16th, Tuesday, May 7th, Tuesday, May 21st, Tuesday, June 4th, Tuesday, June 18th, Tuesday, July 2nd, Tuesday, July 16th, Tuesday, August the 6th, Tuesday, August the 20th, Tuesday, September the 3rd, Tuesday, September the 17th, Tuesday, October the 1st, Tuesday, October the 15th, Tuesday, November the 5th, Tuesday, November the 19th, Tuesday, December the 3rd, Tuesday, December the 17th. Discussion?
I guess the only thing, if we're going back in the past history, I think at one time, did we not just have one meeting in the two summer months?
Yeah.
That must be way back. It's not that I can recall, but it must have been
right?
After my time. You may have, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
We did one.
Yeah, it was at one
yeah.
time, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's been done in other
yeah.
places too, but I think Whitestone might be August. I'm not sure they have one meeting. But
yeah, yeah. Yeah, I just thought I'd bring it up. I'm fine with the two meetings, but I just thought I'd throw it out there in case there seems to be less work through the summer. It doesn't seem like there's ever less work for us lately, but...
Well, I'm finding, too, that I often thought for the seasonal residents that they should have access as well. There's sort of reduced access if you just come down to one meeting a month.
Mm-hmm.
And they may have issues, too.
Yeah, so I'm fine with it, though, the way it is.
And it's just two evenings a month. It's not every evening of the month. It's just two evenings a month that we're coming to meetings.
Okay, call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 23-718, moved by Councillor Haskins, second by Councillor Kekkonen. Be resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby received report admin-2023-20, proposed amendment to the procedural bylaw meeting schedule from Deputy Clerk Planning Assistant Carly Britton for information purposes. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 23-719, moved by Councillor Zulak, second by Councillor Haspin. Be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby approve the minutes of the November 7th, 2023 regular meeting of Council as circulated. Any discussion of those minutes? All the question? All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 23-720, moved by Councillor Kekkonen, second by Councillor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received a draft request for a proposal to provide a review and new versions of the Township's zoning bylaw and official plan, and further direct staff to release the RFP. Discussion? Okay, I don't know whether we want to hear Carly explain it first.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So our zoning bylaw and our official plan need to be updated. This is a costly process and can be fairly lengthy. So for our procurement bylaw, this would fit into needing a request for proposal. So council has viewed the request for proposal that's been drafted. We had a zoning bylaw change in 2019, the zoning bylaw 2019-23, but it was repealed. So a lot of the work has been done to update our zoning bylaw. But with the passing of that bylaw, there was some appeals, and the township has been working to identify those appeals and then change the zoning bylaw to fulfill those appeals. So we would need to retain a planner to review the documents, and then also there's some other aspects to the zoning bylaw that need to be changed. We need to add some definitions. There's been some cases with minor variances that the zoning bylaw doesn't define things clearly, so working with the CBO and maybe the Committee of Adjustment, we're tabulating things that need to be changed in the zoning bylaw to better enforce it and to make it more clear to staff. As well, the RFP, it also allows us to have GIS mapping. So right now our maps are not updated for the zoning bylaw when a zoning bylaw amendment is carried. And that can be very confusing to the CBO when he's doing zoning compliance letters. He's having to sift through a lot of paperwork to ensure that he's providing the right information. So if a planner were to digitize a map for us, then staff could go in and manipulate the map when changes are made, just so everything is more up to date. For the evaluation process for the proposal, it won't solely be based on cost. We want to look at the qualifications of the planning team. Cost is a huge aspect as well. And then we also need to make sure that there's a lengthy public consultation process so that we can hear from ratepayers as to what they would like to see in the zoning bylaw and official plan, and hold open houses and just consultations so that they're well involved in the process. If some zoning in the area is going to change, then those residents need to be made well aware of that. So that's pretty well it.
So you want more meetings?
There we go.
There we go.
Councilor Zulak, you had a question.
She pretty well covered it. I was just going to say about the definitions. So, like, we're really outdated, and there's a lot of new things that, you know, need to be put in here that would.
Yeah, and in the RFP, we're also asking for maybe solutions for short-term rentals to be addressed in the zoning bylaw, second dwellings, road allowances leading to water bodies, maybe changes in permitted uses and accessory buildings. In addition, so there's other things that have come up that we're wanting incorporated in our zoning bylaw, and we're hoping that the proponent would be able to give us a proposal based on what the township is looking for.
And I know in the past when we've done this, going way back now, but when you get into the appeal process, and part of the appeal actually is municipal affairs. They have the final say on approving an official plan, certainly, and they have a lot of comments. And to make it consistent with your zoning, so it's the two plans have to go together. And I'm thinking that's probably in there somewhere, that somehow they have to deal with the municipal affairs and make sure that they approve the plan before they're off the case. Because we don't want... I've noticed this before, too, with planning matters. They hang on for years and years. I don't even know how planning still takes place, to be honest, but the actual documents aren't completed. And then if there's an appeal onto the OLT or wherever, then this can take forever. And so you have to decide. You want to. I won't say that it's going to be waterproof, foolproof as a document, because there'll always be somebody who will find something wrong with it or appeal it. But I'm thinking the more closely we look at it, and as you say, with having the public certainly involved, and there are certain legislative meetings we have to have, but I think it would be useful, again, when the public, in particular the seasonal residents are here, so some of this would take place during the summer months. And I think that's why I want to get this started, so you can have it out there and have people come forward. And it might be a Saturday meeting, again, to accommodate them. So I think it's something that, you know, we put off for quite a while, and especially with the appeals in place, as you said, the steps were taking place. Everything looked to be fairly good proceeding, but then all the appeals come in, and the third reading was repealed. So we're back to 95-12, which may be deficient in some ways. And yet some of 95-12 can still be incorporated. It might even end up being a 95-12 revised version. It might not be the new one, but some of the new ideas could certainly be incorporated in. And there's nothing wrong, just because 95 suggests the year that it was adopted, it doesn't mean that it's out of date by any means. It can still have new information in it. So, and of course, we can always change the name too. So.
But in the past, municipal affairs was the one that always initiated that we had to...
every 5 years.
Yeah,
the
that
plan.
We had to do the official plan. So they were right on it from the get-go, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the things in here, too. I think it's in here about official plan amendment approval, that the proponent, whoever is successful, will actually argue our case that we would prefer to have that authority as Whitestone does in some of the other townships. They have approval authority for official plan amendments.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that makes all kinds of sense. And plus, it takes away, if we have the professionals on board to do that and get their advice, as opposed to the province stepping in each time at great cost. And I'm sure if they're trying to download some of the their areas, this might be one thing to consider that they might go for it. So it would be up to the proponent, the planner, whoever is chosen, to argue on our behalf that it'd be worthwhile for the province to give us that authority. So I think it's in there. I'm not sure where.
It is in there. Dates are highlighted in the draft just because they're flexible. I would like to have this RFP released this year just so we can give Roshan a figure as to what we're going to be needing as a budget line item to for this undertaking, as it will be costly, and he will need to have that in the 2024 budget.
Another debenture? That's old man. Yes?
So can we go ahead and approve this, get her to do the RFP?
Direct staff to release the crack? Oh, sir, RFP, yes. Any further questions?
I guess going forward, so I guess we'll have to be in touch with either municipal affairs at some point, but I guess they probably have certain items they want in our official plan and our zoning bylaw, most likely to do maybe more houses. Is there certain things coming
and
forward?
And the planner that would put the proposal through would be well versed in what the province
right.
is wanting, so
okay.
they would include that in the proposal.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, the provincial policy statement seems to be changing on a regular basis, so that would have to be incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where it's at right now, to be honest, because I understood that the provincial government was coming up with a new, they didn't call it provincial policy statement as such, but the one that just came out not that long ago, I think they're rewriting that too. So I don't know what stage they're at. But as you say, the planner would have the expertise in that area to tell us what we need.
Yeah, was the province not even thinking of allowing four dwellings in one lot or something like that? Or is that not something they're talking about? Whether that's going to say, yeah, that's what you're going to put in. So it'll be very interesting with them trying to get more housing, how that will affect us. And I get a feeling if they really are really progressive, I think a lot of people living here want quiet and not for us to build up, and all of a sudden the potential around them could create a bit of a problem. But I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Okay, any further discussion? Call the question then, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. Resolution 23-721, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Kekkonen, be it resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the draft conditions met letter for consent application number B14/2023, that's 2165268 Ontario Limited, and further direct staff to sign the letter and submit to the Parry Sound Area Planning Board. Discussion? Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. Resolution 23-722, moved by Councillor Zulak, second by Councillor Kekkonen. Be resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the minutes of the October 26, 2023 meeting of the Township of McKellar Recreation Committee. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? Opposed? Carried. Resolution 23-723, moved by Councillor Zulak, second by Councillor Haskell. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the minutes of the October 12th, 2023 meeting of the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee. Discussion? All the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. Resolution 23-724, moved by Councillor Zulak, second by Councillor Kekkonen. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive report T-2023-14 from Treasurer Roshan Kantia for information purposes, and further that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar accepts the following amendments. Number one, that the 2023 capital budget sources and contributions to reserves to purchase 2023 BCT010 Bear Cove trailer from GF Preston Sales and Service Limited. Two, that the 2023 capital budget sources and contributions to reserves to install handrails by Iron Design Welding. Three, that the 2023 operating budget sources and contributions to reserves to repair the backhoe at the transfer station by GF Preston Sales and Service Limited. Discussion? Roshan, maybe you want to speak to it, or is that self-explanatory? Is it okay? Is there any questions of council? It's all laid out right in the budget itself. Highlighted.
Yeah. It's good.
Okay. Call the question. All those in favor? Not opposed, carried. Resolution 23-725, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Kekkonen. Be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the accounts payable preliminary check run report for October 2023 from Treasurer Roshan Kantia for information purposes. Discussion? Councillor Zulak.
I was just curious, under environmental services, are we still doing that?
Oh, I had that checked too.
Yeah. Are we still doing that at the transfer station? Monitoring program?
Yes, we are.
Oh,
we
how
are.
Long has that been? Hasn't that been forever?
Oh, yes.
I thought they were going to stop.
I thought it was done.
Yeah, I'm thinking it should be. It should be investigated anyway.
Yeah, we have been doing it, and I don't know how long we have to do it.
I'm sure it's done.
Okay.
If you can check somehow.
Okay, definitely.
Yeah, check back, because it seems to me that we have stopped.
Well, the ground itself, I'm not certainly the geophysicist, or whatever they call it, but you'd think the ground would be stabilized enough now, and nothing else is going into that site, that they shouldn't have to continue to monitor. Everything's going into bins and being transferred out. So I would think at some point it should reach an actual state again.
Yeah, I thought it was 2 or 3 years ago that
That's
I thought.
That's what I'm thinking. It seems to me something came through that that was, you know, yay, we're done.
Yeah, so whether something is just, they're continuing somehow or they're just billing us?
Like, close though, like the event for.
Oh, quite a while now.
About
when did we get the
20 years, maybe?
2002.
So you think it would be?
Yeah, it should be done.
Yeah,
definitely checking.
Yeah, they might be just automatically billing us and nothing. They're not doing anything.
Even the last year auditor was asking about the report on from the this you know the whole monitoring
yeah.
program, and they didn't say anything. So.
Okay.
Well, it looks like on page 4 we've had the inspections on the bridges, Stewart's Park, in Holmes, Fords, Rail, Blackwater, Moffat, Herdville, and Broadbent, I guess it would be bridges and culverts. So if we could receive those reports?
8 bridges and 2 culverts.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Greg has told us that it would be end of November, so they should be coming in soon. I looked through the previous ones about 2 years ago, and there's some detail there, but unless you're into the, as an engineer, you're not really sure. They recommend certain things within certain time periods. And I think we need to, I think it'd be ideal, it's not cheap, but for Herdville in particular, to have the engineer actually come and walk us through it, and we find out firsthand, rather than just words in the paper and because they'll put lifespan such and such, but these things have to be done. And I think, for instance, the guide rail itself is quite expensive to have that done. And the question is, would we do that without actually applying to replace the bridge? I mean, why replace the guide rail and the next year replace the bridge? Not that that's going to happen, but... so I think we have to talk to the GDR, is it? I'm trying to think of the company, but the engineers...
GHD Limited?
Is that it?
GHD.
Yeah. And I think it should be a follow-up to that report with Herdville in particular, to have them actually come to a meeting and explain it to us. And I think it'd be too much for Greg to explain it. And I wondered with that report, too, because unless there's something different, I noticed that McKellar Lake Road's not on there as a culvert. And yet that's a major culvert, maybe 2 up on that road. I don't think it was even inspected. It was replaced quite a few years ago. And I know there's another large, at least 2 culverts in Rainsway as you head in there. Those are quite huge culverts that were put in. But they're not being looked at by engineers, so I'm thinking they should be added to the list.
What about the one on Folsom?
It's on there, I think.
Is it on here?
Up by... I think they're probably still calling it Moffat now.
Oh, they call it Moffat, yeah. Okay.
So when the asset management study was done this year, the consultant did mention to the Greg that, you know, we need to hire the part-time or a student to point out the all the culverts and figure out how many we have and, you know, what condition they are. So I think maybe at some point we need to discuss with the Greg about it.
Yeah, sounds good.
So are we able to get send you, would you be able to send us a digital copy of these reports?
I don't think we've received them yet.
Okay.